Ladies and gentlemen, the bittersweet episode that we have every year for these past 5 years that we've been doing the podcast, the Super Bowl edition of the Student of the Game. I'm Kyle, the Student of the Game. To my right, once again, Chris and Weasel. Actually, a Student of the Game first really had a forum was together to watch the Super Bowl the night before the show, so that was all kind of, you know, sentimental and special and stuff. I promise I wouldn't cry. No, but at any rate, so we got a lot of stuff to bring you here, despite the fact we feature only one game, just because this game, like many of the recent Super Bowls, actually quite a good game. I mean, you know, gentlemen, we've been talking about how neither of the teams really belonged based on the outcomes of Conference Championship Sunday and all that. But we did get a good game out of it. We did get a close race in the study hall. And a lot of discussion about legacies and things like that coming up. But first, let's get the part for the non-sports fan out of the way. I'm talking commercials and halftime show. Now, last year, we all, I think, generally took a giant crap on the whole Black Eyed Peas concert, where there was a few guys that did, you know, good flips and stuff. But as far as the music goes, wasn't really very impressive. I think we're all in agreement with that.
Mm-hmm. One good thing about it is you get to look at Fergie.
That was intriguing. I'm going to have to go with Chris on that one. But before we go to the commercials, let's talk about the halftime show a little bit. We had Madonna on, which when I heard about her appearing, the first thing I thought about was me and Chris, our friend Jen Janelle, she didn't change her last name once she got married, so she's still Jen Janelle, but being a huge Madonna fan. And then beyond that, I was trying to think about who would really care. I mean, we're in that place again where we have the old, possibly not irrelevant, but aged star, so to speak.
She's like 53. Season star.
She's 52 or 53.
Yeah.
And sources tell me, the super fan I referred to earlier, Jen, informs me that she also had a pulled hamstring when she was trying to dance as well. So she's old and injured. I mean, you know.
Shouldn't be dancing like she's 20.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I couldn't do that stuff. You know, not that I'm trying to get up in a Empress outfit and all that, but
she's 53. She has your birthday, August 16th.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's kind of funny, actually. I had no idea. I don't know what to make of that.
August 16th, 1958.
Wow.
You know, we want to get the exact date, so we're all age 53. He's like, I'm done.
Okay.
Yeah, the only part that's scary about that is my mom's only 5 years older than her. But yeah, so at any rate, you know, we make the joke about how old she is, looked really good in the outfit, you know, was not anything inappropriate to be seen. Certainly wasn't Fergie, but, you know, was respectable, looked better than Kelly Clarkson did, but that's a different topic. There was a whole big production about it, the whole gladiator thing with the stage and her in the Empress outfit, and then the what appeared to be a wardrobe malfunction for a second when they went to transition her to the cheerleader outfit. But LMFAO came on, you know.
That's pretty awesome.
Madonna shuffling with a bad hamstring was interesting. That was, you know, the music was good. Everyone's all miffed that she didn't do Material Girl, but gentlemen, she's 53. I don't know that she can hit those notes anymore that high. I mean, your voice matures at 33 or something like that, and then it's all downhill from there, you know, allegedly. I don't know. But, so yeah, any thoughts on the halftime show thus far? We'll get to the controversial part in a minute. Yes, there was controversy.
The cool thing was the effects they had on the stage.
Oh, the video screen. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah.
Really cool, and I thought it was all right, you know, Madonna. And then they had the other stars come in, like CeeLo
Green was made in an there, appearance.
LMFAO, and you had a number of them, and it was cool. I liked it.
As the resident hip-hop expert, Weasel, these female rappers that came on, MIA, I believe, do you know who they are?
Yeah, I think I've heard some, yeah. But were they the ones that put an obscene gesture or something?
In addition to dropping an S-bomb, that's correct, Weasel.
Yeah.
So, see, here's the thing about it. If I'm a hip-hop artist, I'm obviously not, but if I were, today I'm calling my PR agent and I am burning MIA because they're the reason why you don't get hip acts headlining the Super Bowl. Okay? Boob Gate was, what, 10 years ago now-ish? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't want to know exactly. I don't really care. But the point is, that's still part of the lexicon connected to the Super Bowl halftime show. it happened that long ago, and a lot of people, when it happened, didn't realize it noticed. Unfortunately, the internet back then was like, look, it is a boob, you know. So that is one of the negative effects of DVR and internet, at least according to CBS, who had to pay it like a 7-digit fine. I don't know that there was a figure released for any FCC fines at this time for MIA's performance, so to speak. But people wonder why there's not newer names in the halftime show. That's why. They can't be trusted. Right? I mean, you tell me, Weasel, and again, I call you the resident hip-hop expert. I say that because Chris and I, we don't listen to hip-hop. You know, if we were the general in the South Park movie when Chef asks about the Emancipation Proclamation, we may say, I don't listen to hip-hop. That could be a hip-hop group. We don't know. You know, all seriousness. So, I mean, as the one who listens to it, like, you're some sort of a network exec, let's say. Like, let's say you're the Fox. You're Rupert Murdoch. You come from a Republican household. You're Rupert Murdoch, okay? You are trying to pick who's going to be on the halftime show for the Super Bowl. You're working with the NFL to do that, and you want to sway influence on a performer. Can you name a hip-hop artist that wouldn't be considered risky? And no, Will Smith doesn't count.
Maybe, like, well, Bruno Mars, kind of, but B.O.B. would be kind of, yeah.
Bruno Mars ain't hip-hop, is he? I mean, that's definitely a pop genre.
It's a pop genre, but like a B.O.B. or, yeah, you can always, I mean, they didn't help at all, but yeah, it's tough for hip-hop, so.
I mean, you know, I don't even know who B.O.B. is, too. That's the other piece, is, you know.
Airplane.
We'll get on that later. But, you know, like, hey, maybe DJ Steve Porter needs to get out there and throw down a damn Tebow song, right? No, but in all seriousness, see, that's the problem. They don't reach enough people, and they're too risky. So, yeah. Too much risk, no reward. DMX, not he's even right DMX. Out.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you know, that's an artist I prefer amongst the hip-hop realm.
Yeah, DMX.
Yeah, so, I mean, Chris and I are like, oh, yeah. But, you know, we got nothing there. So, anyways, but beyond that, I thought it was a good show. I know we have pretentious friends when it comes to music. Sorry, Blake, this is about you, who didn't really care for it. But I'm like, at this point, what are you going to get, dude? The Super Bowl is not a musical concert. And that's what I think they're getting wrong. It's an event. And that's a draw. And people are getting all pissed off. Oh, she didn't sing Material Girl. It's a medley, not a concert.
Yeah.
You know. And then she also had to incorporate a new track in there, too, for marketing purposes and stuff. So what'd you expect to have? I don't get it. Chris, anything to add?
Yeah, but I mean, last year you had Black Eyed Peas. Before that, you had what, U2?
Yeah, which U2 was stupid. The Who,
right? But yeah, The Who, and it's like they have the retirement home halftime shows.
Well, if you were going to strike,
Janet Jackson back in, you know, the Boob Gate.
Yeah,
she was way past her prime. It's like what's.
She was though, but she was kind of a sideshow to Timberlake though. Right, I mean,
but. Still, she Department was more, expression. No, but she was more of it. It was her, and Justin Timberlake came out.
Oh, was so yes. She was the feature. Yes. Okay.
So they always go with these retirement home halftime shows, which
I mean,
it's like every other year. Okay, we did a now generation. Now let's do one from yesteryear. Let's do one from the 80s.
This was nice too. Madonna brought in the more current people,
right?
Well, which I liked. That's what they've been doing of late. You know. Like that.
But then also with MIA, did you even know who MIA was before this?
No, I didn't.
Well, it worked for them.
Did it? You don't
flick them off. Everyone knows who MIA is now.
All right, well, that's gentlemen, the thing. Let me.
We're all talking about it.
Here's
right
the
now.
Pop quiz. Here's the pop quiz. I understand the concept of there's no such thing as bad publicity, but at what point is the bridge burned?
Well, you know, you got people like us that probably. Who cares, whatever they are, but you get the younger generation, it's like, oh, they flicked, let's go listen to them. You know how many hits they probably have today, MIA? Oh. And the reason why they came in is because they're British hip-hop artists, and Madonna's British.
Right.
So.
Well, and then, so let me pose the question then. Would this be enough would it be enough negative pub to substantiate a career? Or do you think there's too much negative pub that they're eventually going to be on a burn list, essentially?
No.
You don't think so? You think this is ultimately positive?
It's too soon to tell. We
of course.
You got about 2-3 months.
I am asking you to speculate. That's
right.
True.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't think it's gonna be that bad. I don't think it's gonna be like a burn list.
I mean,
yeah, burn list from, you know, anything of network. Maybe. Yeah, they're burned from networks, but...
But they're going to make a career out of it on the internet.
Yeah.
Still be a musical artist. I mean, you know, Chris Brown got his career back after he beat up Rihanna. So, I mean, that's obviously the antithesis to what I'm saying. But so, anyways. Well, okay, so that's 10 minutes in. Let's go ahead and jump to the commercials. I don't know about y'all. We'll start with top commercials first. For my money, gentlemen, the Doritos commercial. First of all, successful commercial. Why? I knew it was for Doritos. Is the commercial opens with a guy with a berry. The guy finds a buried collar. Apparently, it's for the cat.
No, he was doing some yard work, and he looks over, and the dog is burying the collar of the cat.
Right.
And then he looks back down. And he looks up, and the dog's face is right in his face.
and the dog's like, sliding him the little bag of the Doritos with the note on it. You didn't see anything, or something like that.
See nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Here you go. That was funny enough. So then they cut to, you know, well, Doritos is the bomb, whatever. And then they go back and they show the guy sitting at the kitchen table. He's like, "Have you seen Mittens?" Or Muffy, or whatever the cat's name was, and the guy goes, he looks up outside the patio door as the dog with another bag of Doritos hanging out of his mouth. That was classic. That was my top commercial. I'll give second place to the weight loss dog, but I had to remember what the product was. I think it was VW.
Yeah.
But
Beetle, the new Beetle.
You know, the dog tries to go out the doggy door. He's got a butt too big for it. He looks in the mirror. He's all self-conscious, and it cuts to him exercising. He's going up the stairs and chasing the ball. And he's pulling the piece of plastic with the weights on it. And, like, the funniest scene for me was when they show his owners dropping food for him.
And it's hitting him in the nose.
And he's just not eating it. That, to me, was hilarious. And then the next scene when it shows him after, you know, the after picture, after the montage, he looks at the mirror, he's like, rah! He's so proud of himself. Then the car comes by again, and he runs right out the door and chases it. And then, oh, it's a VW commercial. I thought it was going to be something completely different. But, no, it was... Those are probably my top two. I know there were some other decent ones, but whichever one you two want to go first.
Go for it.
All right, yeah, I got the missing cat as number one. Because, you know, the Doritos commercial.
And cats suck. Right. Nah, I'm just kidding. I don't want to alienate our female audience.
There you go.
I like dogs. I'm not an animal hater. I just, yeah, anyways, go
just
ahead.
I like cats.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my wife has two. I tolerate them.
The number two one was the Bud Light Here We Go commercial with the rescue dog. He just got, and every time he goes, here we go.
Oh!
The dog's name is
here
We Go.
We Go. Yeah.
No, the dog's name is We Go. Right. So call him. Here We Go.
Yeah, every time you hear here we go, he always went to go get a beer. And at the end where it says, you know, he brings out a group of people to the party, and he's like, here we go. And the dog looks up and puts his head down, and the next thing you know, the next scene, he's rolled a keg in front of him. And I'm like, yeah, it's a good dog.
Yeah. It's like one of those carnival things where you see the guy on the giant, like, leather ball, and, like, he's like, walking on it, skipping it. That's what this dog's doing to the keg. That was a cute commercial.
But then also at the end, they had the, you know, about rescuing pets and everything.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
This, another public, you know, address. And my third one was the M&M stripping.
Dang it.
With the LMFAO, I'm sexy and I know it. When the female one is milk chocolate outside, so the red M&M comes in, it's like, oh, it's one of those parties. And strips it out and starts dancing. So that was good, but then at the end, when he kept going, wiggle, 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 right in front of her,
it's like, done.
Yeah.
That was actually my number one.
I mean, at least it didn't cause another boob gate, but I digress. Okay, so that was your number one, Weasel. What's next?
Number two was the WeGo Bud Light Rescue Dog WeGo.
See,
we matched.
I like how mature you guys are getting, that none of you mentioned the commercial with the little boy who had to go to the bathroom.
That's gotten some bad pub.
Oh, actually, that got honorable mention for me.
Okay.
I had three that got honorable mention. One was the Dannon yogurt with John Stamos, just because he got headbutted.
That was great. That was my number three.
That made that honorable mention. And then the Tax Act one was the one that he peed in the water.
Tax Act. Yeah. I couldn't even remember that.
Just at the end it had that. And then my other one was... E-Train one, just because at the end he goes, I'm speed dating.
Yeah, the E-Train baby.
What are you doing? I'm speed dating.
the E-Train baby making another comeback during the Super Bowl. You know, that's a good thing. Now let's get into the ones that were awful, and I'm probably going to get some hate mail for this, you know. feel free to email me, thesotg@gmail.com, or comment on the page if you got a problem with it. But the Ferris Bueller commercial, complete waste of my time. That was such a letdown. And maybe, and like, you know, we've had this discussion where, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of the movie The Hangover, but like so many people were hyping it up at my job. I walk into Chris's house where we watched, or Chris's parents' house rather, where we watched it, and I got people hyping it up there. I go to watch it. It was awful. I mean, first of all, no reference to him being a righteous dude. Okay, first of all, okay, you fail already. They at least managed to fit in the Broderick instead of Bueller. Okay, you're trying. You're still failing. Okay, I like how they tried to get a principal figure in there to be the villain. But no. I think the problem is it should have been so much more than it was. And does anyone remember the product? Because I sure don't. Was it the car?
Honda CRV.
Oh, so it was. Okay.
The thing is he looks exactly the same.
With a little bit of gray hair. Yeah. It's very close.
Oh, it's weird.
You know.
Yeah, that was my number three of the worst. So.
Okay. And I mean, my top worst one was the, it was a local affiliate commercial for Mercedes-Benz of South Florida. And the part was, it was just like, South Orlando, thank you. Right. And the point is like, but the concept is, here's John, and he's at the game, and Jenny's out shopping. But while she stopped off and bought a Mercedes-Benz at Mercedes-Benz of South Orlando. What?
Yeah.
Are you high? Okay, let's pretend that. What? Weasel, what would you do to your soon-to-be wife if that happened? Okay, we're going to leave that alone.
I wouldn't be very happy. Yeah.
We're trying to avoid you having an MIA moment on my show, so. Iowa show, I should say. All
right, so then let's go to the second part, then.
Well, oh, said it, yeah, there you go.
It was affordable.
What?
It was affordable, yeah. It's like, really?
So she happened to buy a Mercedes-Benz, so it was affordable. So she still had enough money to go shopping. Wait a minute. Okay. Because, you know, whenever I go car shopping for my Pontiac, and I could say Pontiac now because it doesn't exist anymore, so I'm not advertising. When I bought my Pontiac, the first thing I said wasn't, yo, I'm headed straight to Old Navy, biatches. No. So a Mercedes? Anyways.
Yeah.
That's it for me. Those are the two I like the least. Weasel?
I don't like the Budweiser's Prohibition ad. It was just so obvious, and it drowned out. Or it was just the one where the back in the day, Prohibition was lifted.
That Evolution commercial?
Yeah, commercial.
It was pretty
and
cliche.
It was like, it just kept going and going, and then it got just to be really corny.
But conversely, the NFL had an Evolution commercial where it showed the guys in the leather hat. Helmets,
that
allegedly.
That was kind of cool.
That was kind of cool. And yeah. See, they evolved that through. That was a good time.
I like that one.
And they had the, on the NFL one, they had the years as the yard markers down
right.
the field.
That was very
and
creative.
And as they transformed running down the field.
Creative.
Right. Yeah, but the Budweiser always does that, you know, cheesy, corny one commercial every Super Bowl now.
But see, that was that was the Clydesdale commercial, though. They usually have a good commercial
every
year.
Clydesdales did go up on the back legs, which Clydesdales usually don't do that too much.
Yeah, but, I mean, that was the Clydesdale commercial this year, where right. before you had the fire rescue dog, yeah. and then, you know, another year you had them actually, quote, playing football, and one of them kicks the field goal. And
yeah, those are cool.
They usually go for two.
That's when they're swinging for the fences and they hit the backstop.
Yeah, there
yeah.
you go.
And also Pepsi with Elton John at the King's Court. And
another commercial that was not as good as it should have been.
Yeah, it was just poorly done. And
did anybody identify the singer, by the way? By the way, I don't mean Elton John. Nor the one in the basement hip-hop guy.
I read it's something like some...
Is that Jennifer Hudson?
No, it was a winner of...
American Idol.
No. One of those programs. Uh-huh. It was a winner. Not Jennifer Hudson. No.
So why do I give a damn?
Yeah, well, she needed to get something. But what saved it from being number one was Flavor Flav at the end. Yeah, boy! That was pretty awesome.
I knew you'd be about that. And I was saying, man, I'm pissed Weasel's not here yet. Because it'd go, Weasel, Weasel, and it would have been great. Oh, well.
Yeah, my bottom three was one of the Ferris Bueller. I had the Audi Vampire Camp.
That's a good call. That's my number three.
Headlights or daylight. That's what you're trying to sell an Audi on. Is the lights or daylight?
I'm gonna buy a badass sports car, but I wasn't gonna do it until I saw awesome headlights. Look, unless we're referring to the model that's showing it off in the showroom, I want to hear about headlights.
X Factor winner Melanie Amaro was the one singer in the
Who?
Yeah, whatever. and then my other one was the Fiat commercial with the hot Italian chick.
You know, and what's ticking me off about that? I mean, I will grant, gentlemen, the advertisers on Madison Avenue did their job in the Fiat commercials. That Fiat commercial, because I recognized it. I saw that they were advertising Fiat. But, first of all, I mean, I don't know about y'all, but that lady wasn't all that. Sure, she was pretty in the face, but okay, fine, whatever. But we'll get past the aesthetic. I mean, you're probably about to say the same thing I'm going to. Did anybody else not think that was predictable?
Right, but then also, it's like, okay, you got this, like, model as the Fiat and everything, and then the Fiat car is, like, short and plump. And then also, everyone's talking about the hot chick with the commercial. What was that commercial? It was like, some kind of car commercial. They were like, oh, yeah, the Fiat was the emblem on the back of her neck, tattoo.
Oh, and I didn't catch the tattoo, but I mean, well, look, talk about riding in a Fiat. Hi-oh! Right. Anyways, another one that was just not as good as it should have been. So, speaking of things that weren't as good as they should have been, in this case, the Patriots, let's get to the game. We're only about 20 minutes in, but that's fine. Now, we'll take off with that. The Patriots won the toss and elected to defer. Now, we'll get into why that was good or bad later. So we have the first Giants possession. They go down the field. They're looking hot at first, then a couple mistakes, including a left tackle getting beat like a redhead stepchild. Sets up a punt by the Giants. There was four punts by the Giants on the night, three of which ended up being five.
Yeah, five, and then four were inside the 20.
Okay, I had it backwards. And we'll get into the fifth one in a minute. But the first one inside the 20, the punter celebrates just like he did when he was holding the kick that beat the 49ers. Well, not beat, but gave them a higher score. And
that won the game.
Yeah, there you go. That won the game. I'll take that. And the set up a very interesting situation that I've really not seen in the Super Bowl. Brady goes back to pass out of his own end zone, thanks to that punt. Justin Tuck comes bearing down. Super Shredder attacks Tom Brady, and he's very confused. Oh my God, it's Super Shredder in my face. We're calling him that because of the face mask, in case y'all haven't figured it out. And he flings the ball down the field. Trouble is, there's not a Patriot inside of 20 yards. First of all, pop quiz. Gentlemen, have you seen that? This is more of a essay question. Has anyone seen that called in that fashion in any game?
Not down the middle of the field.
Not down the middle of the field, no. Yeah. Now, next question, rules-wise, correct call?
Correct call, definitely.
Would you have thrown the flag on that?
Yeah, I would have thrown the flag.
Okay.
Just, if there was no one, if there was a wide receiver going that route.
Which somewhere. There wasn't. Welker was breaking across the field, but he was 20 yards below the pass, and by the time the ball was thrown, Welker was well past the path of the pass in the middle of the field. So
it was intentional grounding in the end zone. So.
And I think the important element there is that Justin Tuck was bearing down with pressure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's odd that the first time you see it called correctly is in a Super Bowl. So that's probably why the Patriots fans were in an uproar. Oh, sure, you call it now. And to that extent, I understand it. But gentlemen, that was 2 points well-deserved and gained. And frankly, Justin Tuck has 2 sacks and 3 tackles on his stats. I believe it should be 4-3, just by a technicality. Kind of like in hockey when, you know, someone scores on their own goal, the guy that gets the credit is the player nearest two for the opposing team, right? So, yeah. Anyways. So the opening points of a game, a freaking safety.
I know why he threw it down the middle of the field now. He was trying to hit the camera because right before it, they showed his wife.
That's my woman.
Yeah, I was just re-looking at it now. Closest receiver. I mean, you said Wes Walker across the middle. Wes Walker.
Oh, right? I'm not saying he was the closest. Yeah. That's the one I saw.
Right, I know. But I'm just saying. That ball is at least 10 yards, I'd say, over the head of a Patriot receiver. The closest receiver is on the 24-yard line, and the ball landed on almost the 45.
20 yards.
Yeah.
That's intentional grounding. Sorry, Foxborough fans, but it is what it is. So, very interesting concept there. Weasel, take us to the next score, if you would.
The next score, we got the second drive for the Giants. So the Giants drove it down the field, and then you have the salsa man, Victor Cruz.
Victor Cruz, yes, absolutely. And so on that particular throw, you see Jerod Mayo leaping in front of what would have been the passing path. But I think it's just ended up being kind of a good read by Eli Manning, noticing that Hayes, as a linebacker, was trying to watch the receiver and cover him that way to kind of see where it's going rather than have any concept of where the ball is. So Manning bulleted it. Mayo reacted to Cruz reacting to the pass, hurls himself away from the ball, touchdown, Victor Cruz commenced salsa dancing. So with that, we have a score of 9-0. Not something you see a whole lot in any football game, let alone the blasted Super Bowl.
And that was the end of the first quarter.
I was amazed how quick this game was paced. I think I was back at the house by about 10:30. You know, goodness gracious. So, as far as all that concerned, we have a 9-0 score. Then here come the Patriots. They manage a field goal. Nothing really remarkable there, but a lot of key passes, taking advantage of linebacker matchups. One in particular I remember is Wes Welker versus a linebacker. Linebacker's going to lose that every time.
Yeah.
You know. So, we got 9-3. A lot of ping pong in this game, by the way, which is to say that the game wasn't entertaining. Just a lot of quality defense. A lot of smart offense. I mean, both teams had... both teams had about 50%. Actually, one team had exactly 50% of their down percentage. So it shows ball movement. There was offense in the game, but there was a lot of defense too. I kind of felt like the Giants' D line came out pretty flat. O line, not D line. My mistake. Wrong letter.
I was gonna say, yeah, they did come out flat after the first series.
Well, I don't know about all that. The D-line did come out flat. I wouldn't have said then. We'll get to win in a minute. So we got, we were looking at, yeah. So the Giants had 45% third down completion, the Patriots 50. That's pretty good. I mean, that's not great. I think if you're above 33, you're not awful. You're pretty mediocre. So anyways, take us through, Weasel. What's the next piece there?
Well, the Giants and the Patriots, they both exchanged punts back and forth.
Well, here comes the ping pong, another one of which was inside the 20.
Right. And so the Patriots got the ball at 4:03 left. Now, it was a good punt. I think it went right out of bounds at the 2.
The coffin corner.
It's the 4.
The 4-yard line?
Yeah, because okay. It was a 96-yard drive.
96-yard drive. Okay. So the Patriots put together a 14-play drive for 99 yards, which was capped by a Danny Woodhead touchdown, where I believe it was it Justin Tuck, or he dropped back, because I think he
was
kinda
a D tackle, but I know what you're talking about.
Justin Tuck. No, it wasn't Tuck, it was Jason Pierre-Paul.
Okay. Yeah, he was trying to go in, I think he was blocked, so he dropped back into coverage, and the thing that happened was Brady had 5 seconds to throw the ball, and he found Danny Woodhead coming from the right side, cutting all the way to the middle because he had so much time.
And yeah,
you can't give him time.
Rather than having him attack, what they was trying to do was bump Gronkowski. I remember that part of it. But another compelling part was the hole that was missed pretty blatant. I think it was on Bernard. Was that this touchdown or the next? No, it was this one with the 5 seconds. The reason why Brady had 5 seconds is because Bernard was getting his jersey pulled out of his jock. because he was getting held so bad.
Yeah.
Tom Brady then has time, which, as you said it very well, any quarterback, especially Tom Brady, with time, lethal. Danny Woodhead, I think, ran across three different players of coverage before finally finding an opening in the zone. That's why it took 5 seconds.
Yep.
Touchdown, Danny Woodhead. So we're going in with a halftime score of 10-9. Look, gentlemen, we talked about a close game. No one had 10-9 and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, I called 27-20 on WTMY when they asked me for a score, which, I mean, I'm not far off, but, you know, it certainly wasn't 1 point or 4 points final score off. What do you got, Chris?
I was just saying, a lot of people play pools for the Super Bowl, and you get the pool and you get a 9 and a 0.
You're like, dang it!
And you're like, this is never going to happen. They won the first quarter and the second quarter.
Ching!
That's true. We didn't even notice it last night. I was telling Weasel right afterwards after the first quarter. I'm like, you have 9 and 0 in the pool. You're dreading. Like, oh, I lost now. You won. And then I didn't even notice until the second quarter until I'm looking at the score. I'm like, it's 10. It's a 0.
which reiterates a lesson for the gambling punk, public. Never throw your ticket away. Just saying. Okay, so we have that rolling. We come out at halftime, and this is why the deferment wasn't necessarily a bad decision. There was some talk in the media, and actually there was some talk in the media about how deferring might have been the first mistake by Belichick in the game. They're saying that with the benefit of hindsight on their side, okay, you know, the whole thing with the safety being the first score, and I don't know about you guys, but that safety occurring the way it did, I think that was in Brady's head for the rest of the game, because I think that affected the way he threw for the rest of the game. I'll put it that way. I think there was only like 4 or 5 attempts down the field that were 20 yards or greater, and the pick that he does eventually throw was one of those. He was 0 for all of them. Well, okay, 0 for all of them throwing to his own team. And so, yeah. But anyways, take us to the second half.
Well, the second half, we have the Patriots to get the ball first, of course.
Based on the deferment.
And Brady was just on fire on that drive. I mean, I don't think the ball touched the turf.
How many plays was that drive?
It was an 8-play drive. And so 3:48 laps, and it kicked off with a touchdown pass to Aaron Hernandez.
So, yeah, it topped off with that touchdown pass, and I think at the end of that series, Brady was on a 10-for-10 streak, something like that.
16-for-16 he went 1 point during the game, or 16 straight.
Damn.
In one of the games, which was the Super Bowl record.
Okay.
16 straight completions.
Which is how, yeah. I mean, I,
so I think he I wonder, started I wonder, in the second.
Oh, it had to have, during that 12-play right. drive. And I mean, oh, I wonder if that was significant in them getting the lead like they did, 17-9.
Right.
Saying.
Yeah. The thing with deferment is, if you always win a toss, you always defer the second half. Because the way that works with deferring is if the other team, they're idiots, like, okay, we'll kick. Okay, now you get the ball twice.
Well, even aside from tomfoolery, that'll work in UCF intramurals. Let's keep another thing in mind, gentlemen. And of course, that's what I refer to as the double up. Weasel, who scored the final touchdown of the half, the first half?
Patriots.
So who came out and scored immediately after that?
Patriots.
Double up.
Double up.
Okay, that's a problem. Boop. Now all of a sudden you've scored twice. You have a potentially demoralized defense. And really, other than 9-0 itself, this was the biggest lead in the game, if I'm not getting it wrong. So, yep. You know, I called it a commanding lead earlier, which it's kind of hard to picture 8 points as a commanding lead, but with the way this game was going and would end up, yeah, I think a commanding lead is a good way to state it. Anyway, so we have that rolling. 17-9. Probably have a couple field goals in here somewhere.
Next drive, the Giants put together a drive. They started at their own 35, and
5-minute drive?
5-minute drive?
Yeah. That's what I was saying, was it?
Yeah, 5-minute drive for a Tynes 38-yard field goal.
You're over 4.5-minute drive.
So, now, and I'm looking at my notes, there's something we just missed. Let's go back really quick to the first half, where we had a potential turnover there on a fumble. Who was it, by Manningham or?
It was Nix.
It was Nix, okay. Yeah, it was Nix. Manningham didn't get targeted.
That's later on.
No, this is the first half. No, That was the Bradshaw fumble.
No, that's there. It's Knicks.
Spot the penalty in there for the 12 men on the field. You'll see what I'm getting to.
Okay.
So, what it is giving part of it away.
Okay, balls, yeah, that was the third quarter. Was the
oh, was it that late? Yeah. Okay. So ball's fumbled by the Giants, recovered by the Patriots. Flag on the play. 12 men on the field. Patriots defense.
Oh, okay.
Told you it was a first half.
All right. Okay.
See, yeah. I don't have the notes.
I mixed it up.
That's okay, baby. Don't worry about it. See, the sad part is there is a way for you to get it mixed up because both teams at some point on defense were called for a 12 men on the field flag. Although one of them is kind of inaccurate calling it 12 men on the field. More on that later. But at any rate, so there's a potential turnover for the Patriots given up and squandered by a flag for riding the short bus.
It happened on the touchdown drive. The fumble that with the 12 men on the field. It was Victor Cruz.
There we go.
Yeah, it was on Victor Cruz in the first. It was on the Giants' second possession of the game.
Okay.
And it was on their touchdown drive that kept the drive alive for them to score a touchdown.
So it was important in creating not only an opportunity to miss a turnover, but the biggest lead in the game. So, damn. Okay. Now, we're coming up here. I think we're getting close to the point. Weasel, find Brady's interception in there for me and see if we're close to it yet. But as we're rolling along, we got a lot more ping pong.
Well, there was before that... At about 5:36, there was a pass to Knicks who had a pretty good game. Hakeem Knicks had 10 catches for 109 yards, led all receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And
both sides.
And on a second and nine at the 47, he fumbled. And fullback Henry Hynoski.
Very good.
Jumped on it. And that could have been a turnover right there. And that led to a Lawrence Tynes field goal.
Okay, so
that could have been points off the board.
And there's another fumble we'll probably get to a little bit later as well. So some missed opportunities, obviously, for the Patriots. If you're a member of the Patriots team or fan base, you're a little miffed by that. But, anyways. So get us back on track, Weasel.
So the Patriots got the ball after the field goal. And three plays. You go and... it brought up to a first and 10 at the New England 43. Brady drops back. He evades the rush. And I don't know why. He just chucked the ball up to tight end Ron Gronkowski, who was hobbled during the game. He did finish with two catches for 26 yards. Not bad. But Brady just chucked up a Hail Mary 500 pass where... And the linebacker for...
For the Giants, Chase Blackburn.
Yeah, he made a play. He ran all the way back there, and he intercepted the ball at the Giants' 8-yard line.
Yeah, so, technically it's as good as a punt, but it was the game's only turnover, as it would turn out. A little bit of clarification. Gronkowski was open. Despite having that high ankle sprain and being all slowed or whatever... Gronkowski was open. I think he had about three or four steps on Blackburn. Brady throws his ball up. Your assessment of it being a 500 ball is highly accurate. I mean, he did avert a sack and did have to roll out, but he flings this mofo thinking he's got a shot. He did. He didn't throw the correct ball. Blackburn comes in, uses his body position, and look, if you're trying to outbody a receiver, my first choice is not Ron Gronkowski, with or without ankle sprain, and makes a fantastic play on the ball. Granted, the optimist out there could say, well, that's just as good as a punt, but in terms of the psyche, Brady still continuing to struggle against this Giant defense. I think there's only two sacks by the Giants D, but there was a lot more pressures, and Brady escaped a few.
That was on a first and 10, so...
I mean, if you're going to take a shot, it's on first down. I mean, that's a coaching philosophy. Yeah,
Gronkowski had him beat. Safeties came up or something. Don't know what happened. Even Blackburn looked like stopped. He was about 10 yards from Gronkowski. He looked back. He's like, oh, I got
to
go.
Well, by then, the safeties were probably trying to help with either Welker or Branch, I would assume.
Right.
If not Hernandez. But then you're like, well, Gronk ain't going to be Blackbird down the field. He's, oh, hell. Oh, thanks. You know?
Yeah.
So, so as far as that goes, so we have the turnover on the game. What happened next up after that, Weasel?
Took two plays later. So the Giants, incomplete pass to Nix. And then the second play, Bradshaw dodged the bullet. So he fumbled. It was forced by Brandon Spikes. Mm-hmm. And a guard,
Chris Snead,
just, I think it got bounced out, and he just dived right on it.
Yeah,
saved it. That would have been inside the 10-yard line. Gave the Patriots the ball.
So
big turnover that did not happen.
So pop quiz for Chris, because I think he's the one who dropped this fact on me. Brownie points from father-in-law for falling on that fumble.
Yeah, I'm still a little how he hasn't. Except wanting a trade to go to the Jets or something, just so he wouldn't have to play for his father-in-law.
I mean, well, we touched on this too. He's like, Snee, where is your mind at? Going home to your daughter, coach. Come on. Yeah, I mean, that just writes itself, you know. Anyway, so.
That is funny.
Another ball on the ground for the Giants. But bullet dodged.
Bullet dodge, yeah.
Was this a scoring drive?
No.
No, it wasn't.
It was the one that Manning went deep down the side to Manningham.
And he dropped that one.
No, he went out of bounds. He couldn't get his 2 feet in. Okay. And the Collinsworth and someone else kept saying that every time he goes on the go routes, he has the cushion on the numbers to the side, and he always pushes it out. And so it doesn't give Eli a good angle to throw the ball. He has to throw it where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. But you're in the same exact pattern later on in the game.
Yeah, that and, you know, Collinsworth, astute expert analysis, is forgetting about the fact that the safety is impacting his route.
Right.
So, anyways, so take us on, Weasel.
So, the...
That was the one with the pass interference.
Yes. Go for it on 3rd and 10 at the New England 43. It was just about with about 10 minutes left. Mario Manningham was going up against Moore.
More, right. And right. So this was the play where if they catch this ball, they're in field goal range, have the potential to close the game out a little bit. Over the middle, Manningham finds an opening and is executed with what is rape in some third world countries by Moore. Let me check his name here. By Moore. Obvious pass interference.
Sterling Moore.
Not to be confused with Sterling Archer for you TV fans out there, but Sterling Moore comes along and just is all over Manningham's back, pulls his back shoulder away. Now, expert analyst extraordinaire Chris Collinsworth said that it wasn't pass interference because he didn't turn his body. Really?
Turn his shoulder.
But whatever.
Turn his shoulder.
Yeah, I got it mixed up. I think Collinsworth is dreaming about his body at night. Right. Whatever. Where do they get... Anyway, so, you know, this is a receiver who made it to the Super Bowl, allegedly, himself, and this is how good an analyst he is. Really?
Oh, then he goes in.
Weasel, do you want a job? Because I give you that.
Then he goes in real time. You can see it was pass interference, and then in slow motion, you can say that it wasn't pass interference.
What? If it's not challengeable, why is that an issue?
Yeah.
My God. At any rate, make sure they're remember they're dealing in real time. So in real time, it was, but it was what? Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
What?
So anyway, so that the Patriots themselves dodge a bullet here with the help of the officials.
Yeah, Weatherford punted the ball on inside the 10.
Yet again.
Yeah, he came up big. So.
And I'll go ahead and give it away so we don't have to start tracking punts in our analysis here. Five punts, four inside
four.
The 20.
It was four.
Well,
I like it again.
So four punts, three inside the 20. Should have been four per four, but what the giant player who was there, instead of touching the ball like you pointed out, lets it bounce in front of him. It makes an awkward bounce. He dives for it, can't keep it out of the end zone, and the punter has the right to yell at a player at that point.
Yep.
He's on the goal line waiting for the ball. You see the ball coming 3 yards in front of you. Don't let the ball bounce. What's that 3 yards going to do? Just come up and catch it so you know you get it, because you don't know what kind of bounce that's going to go.
So the reason why I point this out, gentlemen, pop quiz. Giants won the special teams battle, yes or no? Weasel?
Yeah.
Chris?
Yes.
Okay, next.
All right, so with the 9:24, the Patriots do get the ball back, and a lot of nothing, you know. More ping pong going, and then we'll take it on to the Giants. Actually, with 4 minutes. Yeah, it was about 4 minutes left. We have...
So we're in the fourth quarter.
We have Wes the Weapon Welker.
Yes. The play assessment as it stands, what was the down and distance on that?
Second and 11.
Second 11. So we got a long down and distance. Easily would have been a first down. Would have put the Patriots in scoring possession at this point. We're in the third quarter still, correct?
Fourth quarter.
My mistake.
Midway and... Yeah, it was a second and 11 and... Welker was doing a corner out to the left, and the safety, I think, bit up, and I think the corner let him go or something like that.
Let me stop you for just a minute. We're a little ahead. So at this point, the score is 17-15. Weasel's calling it, it's going to be 18-17, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So what we have is, as you said, the corner, he doesn't let him by, but he is expecting the safety help. I think he did break a little too soon. I think you were right about that. The safety's not prepared for it. And there's another DB of some sort, whether it's a linebacker that dropped back or an actual safety, I can't confirm. But there was a third player there. Ball's thrown to Welker. Welker, it's thrown back shoulder, but high. Welker has to spin 120 degrees. Welker fully extended, drops the ball.
Two hands on the ball. I mean, he was falling backwards. Yeah. I mean... It's like they said Welker makes that catch like 99% of the time.
Well, in his own post-game press conference, pretty much demoralized as hell, which I understand why.
Yeah.
I mean, he said the same thing himself and missed an opportunity to potentially give the Patriots what could have been a game-closing 9-point lead.
The game wouldn't have been over if they could have still stopped them, though.
Yeah, yeah. I said potential. Yeah. It could have, in reality, it could have came to mean... A 5-point lead, if it's off of a field goal, the Giants could have still won. Now, granted, the seas wouldn't part to let Bradshaw score, more on that later, but it's definitely a pivotal moment in the game, and not just because it's the fourth quarter, but because, you know, the score is so close and all that as well. So I'm going to pop quiz. More at fault with this throw, I'll put it this way. Is it a Welker drop, or did Brady screw up the throw? Weasel.
It's a little of both, but Welker dropped.
Give me a percentage.
More towards Welker.
Numbers.
I'd say, about 60-40.
60-40, Welker. Yeah. Chris.
Yeah, I go 60-40 just because Welker looked inside his shoulder to look where the ball, instead of as he was breaking out, looking over his left shoulder. He looked over his right. Which made him turn around. If he would have looked over maybe his left,
mm-hmm.
he wouldn't have had to make that complete 180 adjustment on the fly, falling backwards.
Okay. For me, it's 75-25 Brady. Brady threw the wrong ball here, in my opinion. Okay. We saw that he went back shoulder. I still don't know why he made that decision. The three of us have seen it happen where he beams that ball, where that particular safety... First of all, I love Herman Edwards. One of my favorite analysts. I kind of respect Ron Jaworski, though some of his performances on Monday Night Football of late have been found wanting. They both said he threw back shoulder because the safety would have crushed him. This safety is 7 yards away. 5 to 7 yards away. There is no way he's laying a hit on him. Brady beams the ball inside, seeing that opening. Now, granted, there's a lot of times I'll talk about by the sideline, you want outside shoulder. This was not by the sideline. Okay.
Yeah.
Beams that ball inside with a dart. Welker makes the catch as he's done many times. Assuming that Brady can hit him in stride, which the way he was throwing the ball tonight, maybe that wouldn't have happened. But Brady attempts to hit him in stride. Welker's preparing for it on the inside because he knows he has this guy beat. So the other thing, the other aspect we didn't talk about is the mental aspect of Welker going, oh, damn it, I want it inside, you know. And I think that was what made the catch the most difficult, was the surprise factor there. And that is what eventually led to the drop. So as far as all that goes, 75-25 Brady, by my count. I don't know that I've changed your answers, but that's mine. So,
I think it could have gone for six.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It could have gone for six.
With the right ball,
with
the right ball,
with
Welker hitting stride, wouldn't even need to be a perfect ball. I'll take an 80% ball with Welker's speed, and I'll tell you, the dude is able to break a tackle. That could have been a touchdown. We could have been looking at a 9-point differential. We could have been looking at a Patriots Super Bowl. and we would have been talking about how the refs screwed the Giants on at least two particular plays. Well, I mean, we did today technically here too, but I think we'd be a little bit more loud about it. You know, refs being a factor in three postseason outcomes. But I digress. Weasel.
All right, so the... where are we at now?
Well, we just finished up. We just finished up Welker, right?
Okay, so the next play was a Deion Branch incomplete pass to Deion Branch, and so it wasn't like the Welker drop was.
That was a much tougher catch. That was a much tougher catch.
Right, but there was still another down for Brady to make up for it.
Right,
and so went incomplete to Branch,
and he got popped on that one too.
Sure did.
Yeah, and so. The Patriots had to punt the ball away. Now, so the Giants get the ball off the punt at their own 12-yard line. First down. You know, you got time to go to the field. And the play of the game right here. It was Eli Manning deep pass to...
Third and what?
First and 10.
First and 10, okay.
First and 10. Eli Manning goes deep down the left sideline to Mario Manningham. A 38-yard pass where he was just he was right near the sideline. He tips his he gets his 2 feet in and falls out of bounds. Now he was in and the Patriots challenged it. And it was it's one of those big plays that maybe he bobbled it. You never know because Manning was chugging it to with his team to
try to get
ball.
The snap.
Just
right.
Because you never know. Maybe he bobbled it.
Or maybe he bobbled it. Maybe the refs will blow it.
Yeah. So,
that's never happened. Calvin Johnson.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was... You look back and they needed that timeout. Maybe the Patriots did. But Belichick throws the flag. And Manningham made an awesome catch.
Well, let me ask you this question. Pop quiz, guys. Perfect pass? Perfect thrown ball?
Yeah, yeah.
Chris?
Yeah.
Yeah, the safety.
Could have been anywhere else.
Safety and
three for
no.
Three, absolute.
Yeah.
And see, here's the thing about it, and here's the analysis. They line up. We got trips right. The right side of the field is completely spoken for. The safety cheats over, and Manningham gets some steps. Eli notices after doing his what was probably his first three receivers in the progression, all being on the other side of the field, pops left, sees Manningham, and the safety... frozen in the middle of the field in the defensive backfield. So Manning throws it, perfect outside shoulder throw. You know, suck it, Collinsworth, again. Safety tries to come over because it's a perfectly thrown ball, can't get the angle because the corner is in Manningham's pocket. He can't make a play on the ball. And Manningham does a fantastic job of scraping both feet in. And more importantly, for the sake of the referees out there who want to call stuff similar to the Calvin Johnson catch, possesses the ball through the entire play to the ground, all that. Belichick challenged it. I don't know if you guys agree that timeout might have been important later, but we'll get to it. Play of the game, simply put. Now, there's a lot of these people out there who want to be like, oh, that's the David Tyree catch of this one. Well, it is in the sense that this was the play of the game. But the Tyree catch is what this play dreams to be when it grows up, okay? I mean, first of all, the Tyree catch, everyone forgets about elusive Eli escaping first, right? Elusive Eli escaping. Ooh, triple assonance. And then throwing the ball down the field and all the circus tomfoolery that is pinning the ball against the helmet and all this other crap. Probably a little bit of an element of luck to that play. Whereas this was just technically sound. If you were to look it up in a textbook, this is how you do a play like this after a check down the field and throw the ball to the outside shoulder. Boom. Picture of Mario Manningham.
Yeah, what's also with the force out rule is that you have to get your feet in. I mean, once he's up in the air, the safety or the corner could hit him out of bounds.
And he did a good job of dragging.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, he just dragged it right in. So it was a great play.
Yeah, and it's with Belichick calling timeout for a challenge, he asked him at that point. Yeah. You're only up by two. You have to call it regardless. You don't, like you said, the refs can blow it. He has the refs on payroll.
So he's...
You know,
he has the refs on payroll, yet they threw, yet they called that safety against Brady. Right. So he has a rogue official on his hands.
Yeah, so that's when they haven't didn't call anything else after that. You know.
Yeah. Well, the whole that's true. Like that. That's true. That's true.
So he's in that say that you have.
Would
to,
one be bold enough to say he's playing the odds?
Right. It's one of those ones. They had three timeouts left.
Yeah.
Let's use it. You know, maybe there's something that they might see differently.
When you put it that way, it makes more sense. I'll be honest. I didn't think of the cynical approach of these refs could screw it up. Not to use a negative connotation to say it's cynical. Skeptical, perhaps. Referee skeptical, which, hell, I'll admit I am. So, okay. I get it. Anyways, take us through the rest of the drive.
Yeah, then Eli went four other attempts to Mario Manningham after that. Or no, three other attempts after that. Next one was incomplete, then a short, like a 16-yard pass to Manningham, and then...
Well, I think we said the next incompletion, I think he was still excited for making that first catch, so he was a little jittery.
Right. And then he... trying to... here. So then they hit Knicks for an 18-yard gain, or no, 14-yard gain. It's 18 yards. And went out on the 18-yard line.
After right? the after the incompletion?
Yeah, okay. After the two other catches by Manningham.
Okay.
And then I'm looking for the first down. Where was it? That was at the 18, but I thought it was sooner than that. That Knicks, when he caught the ball, he went out of bounds and stopped the clock.
Oh, yeah, that was a big...
Okay, so, yeah, this is the drive where we're leading up to it. Now, you, your response was, that's okay, I'm shouting at it, you moron!
Yep.
Of all the places, your dumbass goes out of bounds, you needed to go down there. The Patriots have two timeouts at this point. What's left on the clock at this play, Chris?
Sure. It's about two.
Regardless, it was right after the two-minute warning, right, I know that much.
Yeah, right.
So, you've handed another clock stoppage to a team that's going to be trying to beat you.
Yeah, he got 14 yards on it. It was a second and eight.
Okay. If it was 12 yards and he falls inside, he did his job. 14 yards, stops the clock, failed.
Yeah.
Wasn't epic because they still won the Super Bowl. I get it. All right. But I was very... definitely a lack of discipline. I mean... Look, as far as Knicks goes,
it wasn't that one. It was two plays later. It was a second and three at the New England 11 when Knicks had a 4-yard gain.
Well, at any rate,
out of bounds at the
right.
seven.
So what we're talking about is we're in the red zone,
right?
And we're less than 2 minutes left. This is setting up what is the final score of the Super Bowl here, right? Okay, so we have that. Then they run Jacobs or Brett. They run the ball. That stops the clock.
Yeah, they run the ball. That
then of the timeout.
Right, the Patriots called the timeout. There was a minute four left.
Okay.
You know, that was their timeout number two. So the very next play, second and six, you know, Bradshaw up the middle for a touchdown.
In the middle of the parted sea. Apparently Eli is Jewish because when he handed the ball to Ahmad, that just doesn't make any sense, the seas parted as if Eli were Moses. Let my Bradshaw through. That's the best I could do for let my Bradshaw people go. Let my Bradshaw go. High five. Very nice. Let my Bradshaw go. And thus the Patriots did. In fact, some Patriots were so excited. Vince Wilfork, there's video out there. If you see the right angle, it kind of looks like he throws up a touchdown signal. I'm just throwing that out there. My co-hosts bring this to my attention.
That's what they wanted.
They let him score. That's what I'm trying to say.
The line, I think it was Brandon Spikes.
Brandon Spikes was like, yes!
Yeah. Brandon Spikes was saying after the game that they would have carried him in the end zone.
Right, so. Because they're wanting to give Brady time.
But if he were taking a knee down, they would have, you know, he stopped his, could have slid forward like quarterback.
He could, well, and in the rule book, the way he gave himself up is he took a knee. He would have taken a knee. Before his knee touches down, he falls into the end zone. Because no one tells him, don't score, until Eli, according to Eli's press post-game press conference, hands the ball off to him. Is in mid-play. Hands him the ball. Don't score, don't score. And then Ahmad Bradshaw's like, yeah, what?
He chucked it, too.
You know.
He was trucking.
He pretended to take the knee.
Because he's expecting to get hit by Vince Wilfork, and he's like, oh, this is too easy. Oh, hell. Yeah.
Yeah, he tried.
Anyway,
he was going, so with, I mean, you can't really blame him.
With one timeout instead of two left, Brady gets the ball 57 seconds left. Now, probably the most egregious drop of the game takes place here with Aaron Hernandez on one of the throws, but even if he does catch it, the Hail Mary throw attempt that happens is only 10 yards further up, and it would have wasted the Patriots' last timeout. That's all that really led to happen. So, I mean, the throw up the Hail Mary, which, after the replay, looked pretty close. By the way, DB's Hail Mary, you hit the ball down, not up. Thank you.
Yeah, but the Aaron Hernandez drop came on 2nd and 10. 1st and 10 was the drop by Deion Branch.
Right, okay.
Actually, no, it wasn't a drop by Deion Branch. It was the one that he didn't get his feet in bounds.
Right, but that was a tough catch. The fact that he even got a hold of that, he should get brownie points. Right. And it's another poorly thrown ball by Brady. I don't care how good Giselle thinks her husband's arm is. He sucked in that game in key moments.
But it was 2nd and 10 on New England's 44 with 18 seconds left, because it was right after they got the first down to Hernandez for 11 yards. Brady spiked the ball. So it was like 18 seconds left. Giants got called for 12 men on the field.
It was awesome.
Now here's the thing, gentlemen. They executed a play. It took 9 seconds off the clock, and you only gave up 5 yards.
Win.
I said this at the time. Gentlemen, if you're going to have 14 men on the field,
you do it now.
Now's the time.
And what did I say? This is going to be the trend now, that you're up by, they're so driving, much. And you're only up by like 5 or something like that, 4 plus.
You just got to pray the officials don't notice it until after the ball's hit.
All right. Just sneak that 12th man on.
Sneak him on there.
Right? He can just run out of middle of the damn play. Screw it. I think at that point that'll be an unsportsmanlike, but whatever.
And if the ball was just tipped a little higher, Gronkowski might have had it.
Yeah.
He was diving in. Yeah.
The ball hit before he dove. But I'm kind of tired of these players, batting up, batting down, whatever. Because, I mean, look at last year with the Jags game, he batted it down right into a guy there.
He tried to bat it down. He just tipped it.
But why don't you just bat it out of the back of the end zone?
There's that.
It's easier if you're going like this, just to go like that further back. Their guys aren't going.
The former soccer goalkeeper hitting it up and over. That's the technique, man.
It makes more sense because they're training these receivers to. You have a drawback guy, a slow one down the field, which was Gronkowski, because of his ankle. Because if his ankle wasn't there, he would have been the one jumping up with Hernandez.
Right.
With Welker as the back coming up. Since he's a little small, he cut through someone's leg.
That's why Gronk was the trailer, because he was hurt. That's a good point.
But send it to the back of the end zone, because it happened in the Bears-Chiefs game.
Ebner Urlacher.
Yeah, he batted it down, and there was McCluster.
Aw, hell.
Aw, quack.
Aw, quack. Yeah, because I could definitely see Urlacher saying that.
Just bat it out of the back of the end zone. You don't have to worry about it. Don't knock it down.
So, Chris, I give you props for bringing elements of football into football from your high school days. Absolutely. So, gentlemen, we're up over an hour on this show. So what we can do is we can wrap up here, or we can... Or we could talk about legacies and all that extra stuff now, or we could cut to a second show.
Just keep going.
All right.
Keep going, may as well.
So we have the Patriots, who have only beaten one team with a winning regular season record, and that was the Ravens last week, which, whether they actually won or not is a matter of some conjecture, failing to win in the Super Bowl. If it sounds familiar to have an inferior team with an easy schedule get to the Super Bowl, the other Manning, Peyton, beat the Bears, who got to the Super Bowl in similar fashion with Rex Grossman. No offense to your fiance, but, whatever. If she whines, I will gladly have that debate with her just out of arm's reach. Anyways, so this brings us to our MVP concept. Now, as is custom, when there's no real standout player, the quarterback gets the MVP award. First pop quiz. Should it have been Eli Manning? Weasel.
I think because there wasn't a clear-cut defender, there wasn't a clear-cut wide receiver, because...
Wasn't a clear-cut defender. Interesting you mentioned that, but finish your point.
Yeah. Because there wasn't that wide receiver, like Nick's had the two touchdowns or so, Maybe him.
Or Diggs had a touchdown.
A touchdown, yeah.
Because Deion Branch had a touchdown. Yeah. 10 or 11 catches, 111 yards, I think in 2004 against the Eagles. And he got the MVP for that game, right?
Yeah. And Manningham had the great catch down the left sideline that on that game-winning drive. But the thing is there wasn't a clear-cut guy.
Yeah. Manningham wouldn't have gotten the award because he did not appear in the game until the second half.
Yeah. So... gotta give it to Eli.
There was a clear-cut guy, 75% completion percentage.
Before you give that all away, here's the point I wanted to bring in. When I was on WTMY on Friday during their patio party, where I preached this to the crowd on Main Street because they were doing their broadcast PA on Main Street, so all of Sarasota heard me say, if it were me, it's not going to happen, but if it were me, I'd pick Jason Pierre-Paul. He's going to get 2 sacks. Probably a pass or two defended, and make an important scoring play. I was this close. It was Justin Tuck that had 3 tackles, 2 sacks, and was the one who caused that safety. Now, the stats won't reflect that, though they should. Like we mentioned earlier, he really has 4 tackles and 3 sacks with 2 points. He did that, and I looked like a genius until Chris came in and said, you know, he came in before the show and said, you really think Eli was the MVP? Dude. 30 of 40. Really? Oh, yeah. 75 effing percent. Kind of like what you just did right there. So finish it up.
No turnovers. Mm-hmm. 1 touchdown pass. But we were actually talking before the game, and my dad was like, when people start doing the tuck, you know, samurai. They're really going to start doing that.
Now. He's kind of got a samurai mask on his face mask, right? Super shredder samurai. I see the...
So I think everyone should start doing that now. Call it the tuck or call it the samurai or something like that. You just go over like that and bow down.
Call it the Justin. The tuck is better.
No,
you can't call it the tuck. Why? It would be the second time the Patriots were beat by a tuck. The tuck rule being the other occasion. Oh, I went there, Foxborough fans. But the Pats didn't win that game. Oh, no, yeah, they did. They did. Yeah. It was a fumble.
Yeah.
My bad, I got that all messed up. It would have been funny if I didn't screw it up.
Pew.
Yeah, right. So anyways, there's a lot of talk about who this does to whose legacy. Let's go down the major guys who are in that discussion. And obviously, it refers to the coaches and the quarterbacks of the game. Let's start with the losing side. First, with Brady. This Super Bowl would have been his 4th,
mm-hmm.
tied with Bradshaw and Montana. You know, all these morons out there who want to try to tell me that he's better than Montana would now have ammunition. You know, anyway, so now Brady's lost this game. Impact on his quote-unquote legacy. And you gentlemen have a thought?
He's still, top 5, top 10. I mean, definitely. But he's still, it kind of hurt when he's, when he gets 2 giant losses on his, on his resume. So, but he's still got 3 Super Bowls. And, I think he has the 50-yard... The 50 touchdown record.
And let's not forget that 16-0 somewhere in there.
16-0. So,
18-1.
It would have been nice if they won for them, but he still got, a good thing going with Belichick. So,
Chris.
I think it hurts a little bit. It shows a little more of what I said earlier is what we always talk about in college. Some of these college quarterbacks are great, and they can't make it in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Because quarterback of a system. Belichick has a system. Look at when Brady went out. Missed
the playoffs, but was 11-5 doing it.
Right.
I don't care if you hate Belichick or you like him. That's an injustice.
All it did was take when Brady was out. Castle came in and look what he had. The system.
I've been preaching this too.
So it's a system. You put Brady in. Swap out Brady and Roethlisberger. See how that goes. Maybe because he got a better defense now. Or send him out to the West Coast. Have him out to the West Coast and.
Interesting concept. So, if Brady goes to the West Coast and fails, that's proof that it's a system. Now, that's probably not going to happen.
Or NFC North.
Well, the NFC North now is kind of a dangerous defensive...
Right, but still against good defenses. I mean, you got the AFC East. The only good defense there is the Jets, and they're not even all that great this past year.
Well, the Dolphins have a decent defense. They just had so little offense this year, it wasn't a factor. And the Bills had a good defense for a while, and that's when they beat the Patriots, and then they had all the injuries.
And here's the other thing, though, with the AFC East. All 3 of the other teams play a 3-4 defense, which is a big difference than a 4-3.
Yeah, because the Patriots don't have the linebacker staff to play a really good 4-3 all the time. They kind of fluctuate between the two.
No, I'm talking about the Patriots. I'm talking about the Jets, the Dolphins, and the Bills.
I am talking about the Patriots, so they fluctuate between the 3-4 and the 4-3.
But, you know, you get, like, the Giants, the Packers, you know, what was it, 4-3, that's where you struggle.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, so bring it to Belichick. Comments on that legacy. Weasel.
He's going to go down as one of the great coaches. I mean, he's got that perfect season, at least regular season. And, I mean...
So it's kind of the same as Brady.
Five-time Super Bowls. He's been to five Super Bowls.
With Brady.
And his defense, I mean, if you look at that defense, it's like you got McCourty, you got Brandon Spikes, you got Vincent Wilfork.
Let's do this. Compare the defenses of his three Super Bowl wins to his two Super Bowl... Well, I shouldn't say his two Super Bowl losses, but this Super Bowl loss.
It's just... What I'm saying is that there's not a lot of big names on
that. Exactly. Yeah. It's what I'm getting to. Whereas the other crew had Mike Vrabel, Roosevelt Colvin, Willie McGinnis.
Teddy Bruschi.
Well done.
Ronnie Harrison.
There it is. Thank you.
Asante Samuel.
Yep.
Ty Law.
Right.
Yeah.
And then don't forget Ty Warren. Right. The defensive end, who I think, well, he was eventually traded, but did suffer with injuries a lot after that.
And Richard Seymour,
thank you.
It was a respectable defense, and not many big names in that.
And there's a lot of big names all over the field is the important part there. That's a complete defense, as we put it.
Yeah.
You know, but here's the thing about it. Brady, the way Brady's novel would be written is, if his career ended in 2006... he would have been the best ever because he won three Super Bowls in 4 years. It would have been that simple. Now, not the best ever, but, you know, he would have... He was thought at that point that the sky was the limit. And the way his book is going to read, as Tom Kernan put it when I was talking to him today on WTMY.com, and then the Giants came along. And so now he's 3-2 where he was once 3-0. There's definitely an element of a fall there. And not to mention with all the playoff disappointments of late when they've been smashed by the Ravens the previous 2 years in the playoffs. Belichick's similar with one other blemish. Neither you mentioned. Spygate?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, see, now for me, I don't think Spygate, the advantage that he gained, it might have helped him win a playoff game and get him to a Super Bowl, maybe two of them. I don't think all three of them were... gained by him. I'm not going to go Amani Toomer on you guys when he was talking on the Jim Rome show and put an asterisk by the three Super Bowls because of the Spygate thing. Give me a break. But that being said, Belichick was wonderful until the old Sage Coughlin came to town. You know, so let's go to the winning side. What does this do for Brady's legacy? Weasel.
For Manning's?
Check that. Manning. Eli Manning. Thank you.
Manning's legacy? He's got one more Super Bowl than his brother. He's a two-time MVP winner.
Super Bowl.
He played good during those Super Bowls. I mean, you go to like
not Ben Roethlisberger.
I was just going to mention Big Ben. And I mean, he performs in the playoffs. He beat the 15-1 Packers, and they finished the season. They were viewed as one of the great teams out there, and he's performed in the playoffs. So, and I mean, he's got two Super Bowls. I mean, he's up there. He's definitely one of the top quarterbacks out there now.
Okay. So
legacy-wise, he's
cemented as an elite quarterback, as was the controversy at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, when he put himself in with Brady and Peyton and Rodgers, Breeze.
I know you're not doing that on purpose, but that's what kills me, when he put himself in. No, the question was asked, do you put yourself in the same company as Brady? What's he supposed? No, I actually suck ass compared to those guys. I have no business being on a football field. What? So you think you guys are gonna win? No, we suck. We're probably gonna get our butts kicked, and this isn't gonna matter. What? No. What is he supposed to say when he asks that question? Now, granted, he could have said, "I feel like I might possibly be able to filter, sugarcoat, whatever." But he said, "Well, yeah, I think I am," because I heard it replayed today somewhere on the radio.
I heard that someone at work was telling me that he was asked a question about Peyton Manning. I think he said, "What do you think about winning the Super Bowl at the place where your brother you know,
plays
with his whole legacy and all. And the way he answered the question was, he went back just to the Giants. We played a great game, and he didn't really answer the question.
Let me translate.
He just said, "Go back to the Super Bowl. This is what happened." He didn't shed any light on it, which was a great answer. He says him and like the media too. He's not Tebow good, but he's good.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I mean, look, he understands he's got to go to Thanksgiving for the rest of his life and Christmas too, you know. But let me translate what he was thinking. In all seriousness, what it really does for me is make Eli a better big game quarterback than Peyton.
Yeah.
You know, whereas, you know, Peyton Manning, for all intents and purposes, is one screw job by somebody on the hands team of the Colts from a second Super Bowl when the Saints won. Not to take anything away from the Saints, but with a little bit of luck was how the Saints won that game.
And,
anything out of that? Real quick, anything out of that, Chris?
Yeah, I'm saying with Eli, he's been with the Giants, who's been known for their defense.
There you go.
Peyton with the Colts. You got Freeney and Mathis.
Sanders.
Yeah, but I'm just saying you got those two defense ends and been there for a while, but nothing with defensive tackles.
Right.
I mean, the Giants.
There was one year, it wasn't the year they won the Super Bowl, but it was one year surrounding where they did not have a man on the defensive roster 300 pounds or above.
Right. And so then you had Sessions there, you had Bob Sanders.
Marlon Jackson, Tracy Porter, a couple corners.
But it's nothing really stand out. Like, the Giants this year, they rotate 7 guys on defensive line.
And they're pretty good, too.
Yeah, I mean, the Giants will throw with 3 defensive ends at you, you know, with Tuck moving them to defensive tackle. Then you got Pierre Paul and, you know, OCU Manera.
Mm-hmm.
But then they also got 3 defensive tackles with Canty, Bernard, and Linville Joseph that they throw in there and still got some speed on them.
Yeah, I forgot about Joseph.
And, you know, Manning's been...
That's what she said. But,
you know, Manning's been with... Eli's been with, you know, a good defense. So, I mean, it helps. But, I mean, look at his stats this year. He threw for almost 5,000 yards this season. Big difference is 900 yards more than he has thrown in any other season. I just looked it up. But he threw for 1,200 yards in the postseason in four games.
He certainly had more 300-yard games in the postseason than Brady did, without question. Now, Brady also had the, in terms of stats, had fewer games to play, and he didn't throw he didn't throw 300 against the Niners, but he threw 300 against the damn Packers.
And also,
He threw for almost 296. Yes, sir. So, and,
going 75% in 40 attempts, mind you.
All right.
So. Manning does have, for his, Super Bowl drives, towards the end. Both of them, you needed a touchdown to win, and he's gotten them.
Good call. So. Also won both games by 4 points in the Super Bowl, so.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I got that wrong. The first one was by 3. My mistake.
So.
Yeah, but also about going with the Giants' defense, they only gave up 14 points per game this postseason, the Giants.
That's a true statement. So let's wrap up the legacy talk by going to Tom Coughlin. What will this mean for his history?
Yeah, Weasel. He's good. He's good to go. I think there was a story that said he's going to stay. He wants to keep on coaching for the Giants.
Because, you know, yeah, exactly. Because if I'm Coughlin, I would be justified to go, you know what? I'm tired. Peace. I'll talk more on why he might be tired later, but, you know.
Yeah, but, he brought me, I think it was the Jags. He brought them to, up from an expansion team to a contender.
No. Not just a contender. One flipping game away from the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
One alleged miracle, which was a forward pass, away. Because if the Titans lose that game, the Titans don't beat the Jags in the AFC Championship game. The Jags play the Rams in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
All under Tom Coughlin. Now, I will grant that Tom Coughlin had the advantage of Mark Brunell. But... You know,
and,
I guess that means Byron Leftwich really is a coach killer, unless he's a backup.
Another thing he has is that two of the greatest teams that people in the conversation was the 2007 Patriots were in the conversation as one of the greatest teams ever.
Mm-hmm.
The Packers, even though their defense wasn't that good,
it was awful.
it was pretty bad, but their offense was, you know,
stellar.
Stellar, yeah. So they were in that conversation. They almost had a perfect season. If they didn't beat the Chiefs, they would have had 16-0. And
didn't lose the Chiefs.
So he's a coach that took down two great teams on the path to a two Super Bowls. So,
I mean, yeah. And I think the part that a lot of people forget is, like, look, Belichick had the whole thing where he garbaged up Cleveland first, you know, through burned Bernie Kosar and the Cleveland fan base pretty bad with what he did there in his initial coaching effort. You know, became a he's a Parcells product, and then he gets the Patriot job after Parcells and brings them to prominence. I'll give Belichick his credit for bringing the Patriots to prominence, because when he took over, they were a joke. But Coughlin took an expansion team within 10 years, one game away from the Super Bowl, and a perennial playoff contender.
Yeah.
Here's a little bit of irony, though, for you. Coughlin gets fired from the Jags, ends up with the Giants, where eventually ends up with Eli Manning. However, he was fired because he couldn't win the division over one Peyton Manning. So it's Peyton Manning's fault that his brother got the coach that propelled him to the two Super Bowl wins. Lofty stuff, gentlemen.
And you ask Wayne Weaver, who was the owner of the Jags, his biggest mistake he had of owning the Jags was firing Coughlin.
It's really easy to see that now.
It's like, oops.
You know, I didn't understand why they fired him at the time, but that's a different topic. So if you want to bring up any other topics, feel free to email us at thesotg. Fire us a tweet at the handle TheSOTG. You could go ahead and comment directly on the site. Oh, we got to wrap up the chat. I'm glad you held that. I almost forgot. So, right. So but before we wrap it up, you can also subscribe to us on iTunes. But before we wrap it up, let's hit our last study hall. We had a situation last week where Chris won his two games and put himself in position to finish it out co-champion, as I did to Weasel last year.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, because I was a bastard, I picked the Giants, preventing Chris from going homer as he was inclined. He picks the Patriots because he has to, and the Giants prevail. I am sole champion. Woohoo! However, all of us have something very positive to contribute to the end of the concept. I myself being the champion of the study hall this year, two-time champion, sharing it with you last year, Weasel. Chris has the only one who managed to pick a team that was in the Super Bowl among the three of us. He had the Patriots there in August. So, awesome job.
2 years in a row.
You know, although I still call foul on that because I had the Ravens who were screwed out of it.
Yeah, but I did have the AFC Championship. I had the Ravens and you the did Patriots have the, with the Patriots.
You had that exactly.
So I had that one nailed down.
I had
down.
The nice. Colts. I'm an idiot. No,
that was before Peyton Manning's that neck, so.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, August, right? That was only after the second neck surgery.
And I also did pick an NFC East team, which is wrong NFC East team.
This is way wrong NFC East yes. team. But, and so, with that, I might have been the lead score, but Weasel, what was our percentages we finished up with?
You were at 72.3, I was at 70.9, and Weasel was, should I just round it up?
Yeah.
69.
So I may have the lead, but Weasel is the winner.
68.9.
So. I had to call the last three games perfectly to get that.
He works hard for the 69, gentlemen. I bet your fiancé is real proud of that. So at any rate, we'll catch you guys during the off season here. We'll definitely be around more on WTMY.com. We are not going to be gone, even though it's the off season. We will talk to you guys soon. Perhaps we'll examine why Tebow had so much success. At any rate, see you next time. Class dismissed.